The video we watched earlier reminded us of the sacrifice that so many had made, how they fulfilled verse 13 by laying down their life for friends, for family, and for country. Verse 12, "This is my commandment," Jesus says, "that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lays down his life for his friends." Jesus is the one who has loved like this. His is the standard, the example of love that all are called to follow. And he demonstrated that greater love through his own self-sacrifice. And in showing his love like this, Jesus followed in his Father's footsteps. That most famous verse, "God so loved the world that he gave his Son." Jesus loved the world so much that he gave his life. And their love is of a different quality, because they love those who were opposed to them, the world which was hostile to God. Not friends, but enemies. So whether you sit here this morning as a friend of Jesus or as an enemy of Jesus, someone who is following him or someone who is just living your life quite happily in your own way, let's think more about this greater love. Let's think more about this example of Jesus. So first of all, we'll consider the love we all need. Our world needs more love. Our nation needs more love. Our family, our friends, need more love. The world, because we're destroying one another through oppression and conflict. Our nation, because we're divided and increasingly hostile in our public conversation. And as you think of places where you are, think of the office you're going back to tomorrow. Maybe issues within your wider or close family. More love would be better, wouldn't it? More consideration. More kindness. So when we read those words in verses 12 and 13, our hearts lift, don't they? Because we say, yes, this is exactly what our world needs. Yes, this is exactly what our nation needs. Yes, this is exactly what the places and the people I'm involved with need. It's what we want. It's what I want. Well, here we've got Jesus' words to his disciples, those whom he chooses to call friends rather than servants, those who he has brought into his people, into the vine, summed up in him. Jesus says, "I am the vine." Have a look at verse 3. "These are those who he has cleansed. Already you are clean because of the word I have spoken to you." That means fit for Jesus, being part of his people. And he continues to be at work in them. Their dependence on him is complete. Verse 7, "It is his words that continue to live in them. If you abide in me and my words abide in you." Continuing to live our lives by that word, not forgetting all that he is and all that he's done for us. And consequently obeying him, keeping his commandments. "If you keep commandments, you will abide in my love," verse 10. "And so bearing fruit. I am the vine, you are the branches," verse 5. "Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing." And that dependence is seen in the fact that this people are a people of prayer. Verse 7, "Ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you." So Jesus' expectation is that this group, who are utterly dependent upon him for everything, these followers, these friends, will follow his example of this greater love. This is the commandment, verse 12, that you love one another as I have loved you. Laying down one's life for one's friends is the best humanity can do. And we've heard and seen examples of it here. And this is what this remembrance time is all about, as we give grateful thanks for those who did that for us and for our nation. But of course, history tells many different stories, doesn't it? And maybe the greatest tragedy, as we look at these verses this morning, is that history tells a very different story around those who have named the name of Christ. All manner of atrocities have been committed in his name. If we think of the Crusades, we think of the conflict between Catholics and Protestants at the time of the Reformation. More recently, the Christian institutions, schools and children's homes that have been responsible for sexual abuse. And much close to home. Again, think of your office situation, think of your circle of friends. There may be somebody there who would call themselves a Christian, but actually they're the worst gossip in the place. They're the biggest backstabber on the team. So here is a love that we need, but it's a love that seems way out of our grasp. And as you sit here as a follower of Jesus this morning, you will know how far short you and I fall in these things, despite what we aspire to. So the love we all need becomes the love we cannot give. That's our second heading, the love we cannot give. Jesus has left us this brilliant example of what love looks like. Followers of Jesus will aspire to it and try to live it out, but we will fail each and every day. How much more then? Those who have no reason to follow Jesus, those who have no intention of following Jesus. Jesus speaks of branches that bear no fruit, branches that are not made clean by Jesus, those in whom his word does not rule. Have a look at verse 2. Every branch of mine that does not bear fruit, he, the Father, takes away. Verse 6, these branches are thrown away. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. I asked Mark Puckett, who knows about vines and about pruning, about this word clean. And what he said was that pruning vines is very important because it removes the fungal spores that would reduce the fruitfulness of the vine, that would transfer to the new shoots in the next season and eventually spread the spores still further and ruin the grape harvest. And he sent me this picture. The picture of a bunch of grapes where the fungus has done its worst. And as we look at that rotten fruit, we might think, well, thank goodness that these branches are no longer there to do that. Thank goodness that these branches have been removed, now fit only for the fire. So that fungal spore blights the vine. But we might think of a different blight. We might think of the blight that words can bring to our own lives. We've seen it in the public arena. We've particularly seen it in the language of politics more recently, haven't we? The way in which that language has become much more polarized, much more hostile, much more violent. Lots of MPs are standing down. They're not seeking re-election, as we know. And one of the reasons that many of them cite is that, the increasing hostility and unpleasantness of the world of politics at the moment. And I don't know if you've seen some of the interviews in the run-up to the election, but there's quite a concerted view at the moment that all politicians are liars, therefore we can't believe any of them. We have a real problem in our public life because of the blight of lying. And those of you who get The Week may have seen the Ask in The Week about lying recently. It said that we hear about 200 lies a day. I don't know when you started counting, but you will be. Mostly, these are what they describe as white lies concerning inconsequential niceties. Yes, your hair looks lovely. That was really nice. But out of the 200, there were two what they called big lies each and every day. Lies told to protect ourselves or promote ourselves. Lies told to stop us getting hurt or maybe to hurt others. And the article suggested that we learn to lie between the ages of 2 and 5. And the person we lie to most of all, who do you think that would be? Who's the person we lie to most of all? The person we lie to most is our mother. I take the point about ourselves as well. So you see, in this one tiny area, lying, public and private, is but one expression of our unwillingness to follow Jesus, our rejection of his words and of his way of love. It's the outcome of our deciding that we know better and I'll do it my own way. And this blight ruins the lives of many. And Jesus is quite clear about the consequences of this rejection, this choice to do it my way. And he says it will be the same as that of the fruitless branches. And he promises earlier in this gospel that the wrath of God remains on those who do not believe in him. So here then is a reminder of the love that we cannot give, but the love that we desperately need. That leads us to our third heading then, the love that brings us life, which is of course the love of Jesus' self-sacrifice. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. A few chapters earlier, Jesus has talked about himself as the good shepherd. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And Jesus says, you know I'm the good shepherd because I didn't run away. I didn't save myself. I gave myself. I laid down my life for you. He was prepared to bear the cost that we might have life, that we might be part of his people for eternity by giving his life to death. Now, how different that sort of attitude is from the rulers of our world. As his Russian campaign got into trouble in the winter of 1941, Adolf Hitler said this to the Danish foreign minister: if the German people are no longer strong enough and ready to sacrifice their own blood, they should perish. Jesus doesn't ask his people to shed their blood. Jesus shed his blood for his people. The wonderful news that the Good Shepherd bore the punishment we deserve. As he laid down his life for us, not because we were friends, but because we were enemies. He laid down his life for those who were opposed to him in order that we could become friends and followers. Here then is the greater love of the Good Shepherd, a love that we can know through his forgiveness, the love that brings life to us. And this was a forgiveness and a life that has been won through suffering, a love that conquered through suffering. Nigel lent me a book on the Northern Ireland Troubles, which I read when I was on holiday a few weeks ago. And I came across this quotation. "It is not those who inflict the most, but those who suffer the most who will conquer." Not those who inflict the most, but those who suffer the most who will conquer. And Jesus, out of love for his world, for his people, suffered. In laying down his life, he bore the punishment that was due to all of us. That wrath that he spoke about, he took on himself, hence the greater suffering which he bore. What was due to us for our selfishness, for our wrongdoing, for all those thoughts and words and deeds, all the things that we haven't done that we should have done, all those things which in your quieter, more reflective moments you're ashamed of, the things that still send a shudder up your spine, lest anyone read your thoughts, lest by some bizarre mistake you've just spoken what you were thinking out loud. I'm sure, like me, that's something that crosses your minds regularly. One of the discovering courses that we use here at St. John's is called Christianity Explored. And in that, there's a scene in which the film of your life is projected onto the walls of a room, and it's there on display for everybody to see. Now, of course, it's got the successes. It's got the good things. But it hasn't been edited. It's got everything. All those things you're ashamed of. They're all there, available, visible, audible for anyone and everyone to see. How do you feel about that? Well, I know what I'd do. I'd just run away. I'd shut the room, hopefully lock it, so that nobody else could get in. But knowing that, knowing what's really going on inside each and every one of us, Jesus loved us and came into the world. Jesus loved us and laid down his life to make us clean. And that cleansing was only possible by his dying on the cross. It was the 19th century Chancellor of Germany, Bismarck, who said this: "The great issues of our day are not settled by words and speeches, but by blood and iron." The greatest issue of all history, humanity's relationship with their Creator, was not settled by words and speeches, not settled by good intentions or good works. That issue was settled by blood and iron. The iron nails driven into Jesus' wrists and ankles. The blood which he shed to be the sacrifice for your selfishness and my wrongdoing, that we could be forgiven, that we could be clean. This then is the greater love. The love for enemies rather than friends. The love that deals with our greatest and deepest needs. So if you sit here this morning as somebody who would call themselves a follower, a friend of Jesus, will you hear and obey his commandment? This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Will you follow that example? Will you lay down your life for others? But if you're here this morning as somebody who has not yet decided about Jesus, maybe you're actively living and thinking against him. How will you respond to his self-sacrifice? Will you receive the gift of forgiveness and new life, which his love holds out to you? Will you allow him to make you one of his people, a follower and a friend, clean and fit for his purpose because of his death on the cross? This remembrance time gives us the opportunity to look back and to say thank you, to remember the sacrifice of so many. Jesus said, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lays down his life for his friends." So this year, let's make sure we're giving due and proper attention to this Jesus, who sets us the example of this self-sacrificial love, who shows us what greater love is as he laid down his life for us.